This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone. Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Boy, the numbers keep changing here. I'm looking at the Washington Post site right now, and it has changed by 19 delegates just in the last 25 minutes or so. They're reporting right now that Clinton got 582 delegates in 8 states last night. Obama got 562 delegates in 13 states last night. Over Politico, they're reporting different results. AP is reporting different results. New York Times, 20 minutes ago, was reporting different results. To help us make sense of what happened yesterday and last night, one of the most astute political observers I know, Mark Green, is with us. He's the president of Air America Radio, also formerly, page just popped away from me. Pardon me, Mark. Formerly you were the city advocate. What was the title?
Public advocate.
Public advocate. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. At the same time Rudy Giuliani was elected here in New York City.
For 8 years, every day, he was the mayor and I was the number two official. And we liked a good fight.
Yeah, I guess.
There was a lot to watch when he was the mayor.
I guess. Plus, you know, the author of numerous books and lots of other stuff. Mark, your take on last night. You were doing election coverage all night.
Yeah, we had a great time with you. David Bender and I co-anchored. Her levies, we withstood his surge. Tom, friends of mine in the Clinton camp this morning are saying, whew, this is not spin.
Yeah.
They were frightened, rightly so,
yeah,
that Obama's provable surge, collapsing a 20-point national lead, collapsing leads, apparently, in California, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, frightened them. And the last polls indicated, and the Obama camp allowed or encouraged the national media to get out in front of the numbers. So when we started the evening, a lot of people, neutral people like us, thought, oh, my God, if Obama wins any, some, or all of California, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, where she had great leads, he could almost knock her out or pin her to the ropes.
Yeah.
It did not happen. And so whether she or he is ahead by 5 or 10 or 20 delegates last night is interesting. But she is now off the rope, just like she was on the ropes before New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And he could have delivered a knockout punch and didn't. He didn't last night.
I would suggest that this is actually I'm not sure that I would characterize it as a loss for Clinton, but a great victory for Barack Obama, in as much as just 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had a conversation with Terry McAuliffe where he just came right out and said, Super Tuesday is going to decide it. It's going to pack it in. It's going to close the door. I mean, I'm not using his exact words. I don't remember what they were. But essentially, you know, there was some time in the very recent past when the Clinton camp was certain that they had this thing locked up and they were going to walk away with it.
You're absolutely right.
And they didn't.
Both campaigns have overestimated expectations, if I can quote Bush 43, in that the Clinton campaign, I think, made a tremendous mistake a year ago and a month ago by arrogantly projecting they were going to win. It was inevitable. She was the front runner.
Don't even bother to campaign against us.
Look, they never said those words.
When
she announced on YouTube and said, I'm in it to win it, it sounded nice, but that's a themeless statement.
Yeah.
It's a purely political statement. So when Barack Obama said, let's change America and the world, well, that was much more powerful than someone saying, I'm a politician who wants to win.
Yeah.
So she set herself up for a fall. Anybody who watched the Georgetown-Villanova basketball game 20 years ago, you name the sport. Oh, Super Bowl.
Yeah, just last weekend.
You can't look like or think like that you can't lose. Obama, however, didn't knock her out in New Hampshire when he was, of course, far ahead in polls, which were wrong 48 hours out. And last night, the Obama people were so ecstatic, and the national media just picked up on it.
Mm.
And they could hardly contain themselves. Here comes Obama. Obama mania. I remember Kennedy mania with Robert Kennedy.
Mm.
I've never seen a political movement and moment like this guy because he's such a great Speaker has put together a great movement, had the late endorsements, of course, the Kennedys most prominently. Frankly, Hillary Clinton's strength with Latinos and women in New Jersey, led by Senator Menendez, and in California, led by Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, held. Think of a tree with very deep roots.
Yeah.
And because of women and Latinos, she kept her margin in the three states that if she had lost them, Obama would be a heavy favorite today.
Now here's perhaps a flip side on that. In those states where, or at least let me provide a somewhat different frame. I think that going forward now, the future favors Obama, and here's why. And I'd love to hear you rebut this. In those states where he showed up and he campaigned, he did very well. And in fact, in those states where he campaigned regionally, there were some regions in some states that went heavily for Obama. And just by coincidence, they happened to be the places where he showed up. And in this campaign, as compressed as the schedule was, he didn't have an opportunity to really show up in a lot of places and campaign. And therefore, he's new on the scene. A year ago, nobody even knew who he was. So, and everybody, you know, Hillary Clinton's been in the political scene, in, you know, certainly since her husband became president, and arguably even before that. So as we go forward here, it appears that when she shows up in campaigns, she holds what she has. But she was already there. I mean, people have known her for 20 years or more. When he shows up in campaigns, he knocks it out of the park. Does this mean that by stretching this thing out, I mean, I live in Oregon, we're going to be voting in May. Mm-hmm. And it may be that
it may come down to you, Tom.
I know. It may be. I was just doing the local show on KPOJ, and it was like, you know, we may be, you know, not sort of half tongue-in-cheek, but maybe not. I mean, you know, does this favor Obama, in your opinion?
You're making a very cogent argument, but I slightly disagree. Here's why. In any race where you have a very well-known incumbent or front-runner, and a talented challenger. Actually, take Minnesota. Last night we were on with a guy named Al Franken. You remember him?
Yeah, he was on the show a couple of days ago.
He started behind Norm Coleman 50-30. Mm. But everybody knew Coleman in Minnesota, and actually not everybody knew Al Franken in Minnesota. Al now is tied or better with Coleman because Coleman has held steady, but the new guy has grown.
Right.
Obama did that big time, nationally and in the Super Tuesday states yesterday. So that surge occurred. You're right. Question. Did he have Massachusetts, but he couldn't win, notwithstanding the Kennedys. So where we are now is every Democrat voting, 100% of the Democrats who will be voting in the future primaries knows both candidates. They know the name. It's not like Barack who.
Right.
And they know a ton about them from the national media, and now there'll be a focus on each state. So he cannot and will not, of course, continue his climb because the climb has occurred. Well, can she hold on? Two variables. One, money. Second, machine.
Yeah.
He will have, this is astonishing, a freshman black senator will have a huge money edge over the incumbent insider, super famous Hillary Clinton and the Clinton's machine over time. But the Clintons for 20 years are so much deeper in with party regulars, governors, congressmen, senators, party officials.
Otherwise known as superdelegates.
Yes. And so I think tomorrow when we net out everything that's happened, Tom, Hillary Clinton, will be 100 or so delegates ahead, which is mostly comprised of the superdelegate lead she has.
Which could shift. It could shift. I mean, if the popular vote is overwhelmingly in favor of Obama, don't you think that going into the convention, the superdelegates would say, let's create a consensus?
You're right, because the word if.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge if. But to use your Al Franken analogy, we have just a minute left here, but you know, when I talked to Al on the show, he was like, he's doing retail politics. I mean, he has been working his butt off going from little town to little town to little town.
With the 30 seconds left, you said if he gets an overwhelming percentage or a good percentage, majority of the votes, superdelegates will respect that, and then I don't think deny the popular challenger the nomination. However, as we speak, if you count up all the people who have voted in all Democrat in all the primaries from Iowa to last night, because Hillary Clinton's strong majorities in big states like California, New York, and New Jersey, if you just add up the voters, she has about 57 or 58% of those who have voted.
Right.
So at the moment, Hillary Clinton's ahead in delegates, ahead in the number of people who voted. And while he may be ahead in the number of states won, that's not the way you count the game.
Yeah, yeah. So this is going to be an interesting one going down to the home stretch here.
This is a jump ball with her. She's like a service up.
Yeah.
He still has to break her serve, yeah. Although
and,
it's...
And Howard Dean's going to have a big problem if he ends up at a brokered convention.
Get ready. Yeah. The road to November goes through Denver.
There you go. Mark Green, Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. 16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman Program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, because keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege, and we're going to get that if we get a Democratic president, a House, and Senate. So, let's get involved, eh? Interesting report here. I got this via Mark Crispin Miller. It's from Mimi Kennedy, who is an actor and a poll inspector, and was doing, you know, poll watching yesterday in Los Angeles. And a tip of the hat to all our Los Angeles listeners on K-Talk in L.A. If the information, I believe the information in this is reasonably accurate, she suggests that L.A. Democrats make up about 40% of the California Democratic Party vote. That's pretty mind-boggling, if that's true. And given that, if you were Karl Rove, or if you were the Republican Party, where would you want to direct your caging efforts to prevent Democrats from being able to vote? Now, keep in mind, caging is a direct mail technique that Karl Rove, the Republican Party actually is, and there's a federal restraining order preventing them from doing it, but they've been doing it. We know Tim Cummings, I think it was Sarah Taylor. It was one of the women out of the Justice Department's testimony. Oh, yeah, Tim, Karl Rove's assistant, he was involved in that caging stuff. And everybody, Democrats in Congress were like, huh, what's that? What? Well, caging is where they send out a piece of mail that is designed as much as possible to look like a piece of junk mail. So the people don't even bother to open it, or they throw it away. And it says, if you do not reply to this... Or they'll send it as first-class mail, and you know, if it gets bounced back. But they're getting more and more fancy about it. Now they're including cards where you have to affirm that you actually are registered as a Democratic voter and mail the card back. And if you don't, then under the laws of most states, the Republican Party can go to the Registrar of Voters and the Secretary of State's office and challenge your registration. Say, this person isn't actually registered as a Democrat. Or in some states, this person isn't even legitimately registered to vote because they're no longer at that address. And so when the voter shows up, they've got to go through a whole song and dance. It varies from state to state in how it's done, but, you know, basically asking for the election supervisor and proving who they are, and then they have to go home and get their birth certificate and a utility bill and then come back and essentially re-register on site. Some states don't even allow for that. And this is what happened in Florida in 2000, where 80,000 people, mostly African-Americans, got thrown off the voting rolls because the Republicans said their names were similar to those of felons in Texas. This is what happened in Ohio. We still don't know how many people, because there's never been a significant investigation, but it probably somewhere between 20,000 and 100,000 people got caged in Ohio. And Mimi Kennedy writing today... She says, today, Super Tuesday, writing yesterday at the end of the day, a disturbing number of Los Angeles voters were denied a proper ballot. Why? Because sometime in the recent past, they received what appeared to be a piece of junk mail and they threw it away. Oops, it was a notification for them to re-register. Why did they receive it? Who knows? But today, they had to vote on a provisional ballot. That ballot will most likely not be counted. Certainly it will not be included in the first count, the count that gets released to the public and the media, the count that decides the winner. That's called caging. Karl Rove tactic from Ohio 2004, Florida 2000. Karl had a direct mail business in Texas, you see. Now, to make the situation even worse, for independents who wanted to vote in the California primary, there was a little box up at the top of the ballot that said Dem box. And if they didn't check that box, even if they voted in the Democratic primary, even if they picked the candidates and all that sort of thing, if they didn't check that little box up at the top, their ballot got thrown away. It didn't get counted. And again, Mimi Kennedy says that the voters were not alerted of this by the poll workers. It was not included in the official poll worker training. You know, a lot of people, particularly first-time voters, which is a large number in the case of her concern, a large number of Barack Obama voters, although frankly I suspect that there's a lot of first-time voters coming out for Hillary Clinton too, just not even because, oh gee, it's Hillary Clinton, it's wonderful, but it's like, oh my God, anybody but George Bush, we can't take any more Republicans, or both. But a lot of first-time voters coming out, a lot of young people coming out, a lot of people who have never voted before coming out, and it was not pointed out to them that they had to check that little box. And then she adds, finally, a lot of the precincts were shifted around in L.A. County. She says, my precinct was split in half to another garage three streets away, half to the church up the hill, where George and Heidi, my original polling place hosts, told where to send the displaced voters. No. All over this county, we're talking about Los Angeles County, voters wandered into the wrong polling place and had to vote provisionally, which is a placebo ballot for all practical purposes. And her concern is that this was being done in Los Angeles, perhaps because L.A. is where the majority, where 40% of all the Democratic voters in the state are. So, I don't know. Is this conspiracy theory 101, or is Karl Rove up to his old tricks? We know he did it in Florida. We know he did it in Ohio. We know it's being done all across the country. We know that it was being directed out of Karl Rove's office in the White House. There was testimony under oath in Congress to that effect. Did it happen in California? 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at
Grandpa McCain, one of the folks in the chat room. I love it. I love it. Yes, it's going to be fun to start talking about Grandpa McCain. That's, you know, we were calling Fred Grandpa Fred. Is that an ageist remark? I don't know. I'll probably get angry calls from people over 70 now. But I think McCain's age, frankly, will be an issue in some people's minds. Just frankly, as Barack Obama's youth is an issue in some people's mind. Reagan neatly deflected that, you know, by making a joke about it, famously. But anyhow, 10 million Democratic ballots. Oh, and just let me add, in our chat room, which you can get to by going to TomHartman.com and just clicking chat, or from the Air America pages, AirAmerica.com, Tom Hartman page. One of the folks in our chat room says that she or he, I'm not sure the gender with the screen names, that this person was a poll worker yesterday in Los Angeles, and that that person was, and in their precinct, they were telling people, if you're an independent, you have to click that little box, you have to check that little bubble box or whatever it is, to indicate that you want to vote as in the Democratic primary. One of the things I found most interesting is that apparently yesterday nationally about 10 million Democratic ballots were taken, and only about 6 million Republican ballots. This, I think, bodes well for the Democrats in the fall. So we'll see how it all shakes out. 1-866-303-2270. Your thoughts on this. Gladstone in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Gladstone.
Hey, how's it going?
Just great. What's up?
I got three questions for you. I don't know if you're going to have time to get them all in, but the first one was, how is it that they said that Hillary has already won Florida and Michigan when I thought that Democrats were not allowed to campaign there.
Yeah, a lot of us have a problem with that. Her name was the only name on the ballot. Barack Obama's name was not even on the ballot in Michigan. And then, you know, in Florida, it was announced before, during the voting, before the voting was finished, that she was coming down to Florida. And we actually, one person called into this show during the day of the balloting in Florida and said, I'm going to go vote. I'm in Florida, and I'm going to go down and vote for Hillary Clinton because she's coming down here. She's respecting us when the Democratic Party won't. I think that the way that those two states played out, and the way that her campaign behaved in those two states doesn't reflect well on her campaign.
Right.
And if it comes down to at the convention seating those delegates from those two states, it's going to be a mess. There's a lot of people going to feel like, you know, it was a stolen election kind of thing. Not literally stolen, but you know, it was unfair.
Right.
And so let's hope that it doesn't. Howard Dean pointed out this morning that he's not the one who makes the decision. There's this certification committee. There's like 50 people on it. I don't know who those people are. So we'll, you know, time will tell. But there's still a lot more elections to go, a lot more caucuses to go. So
hopefully. And I guess my second question was, like, I don't know about you, but I know that 8 years ago, it seemed like McCain was just like kind of middle of the road Republican, pretty moderate. And now he's just kind of become this old curmudgeon type of guy that, you know, just lining himself up with a Bush doctrine that's not popular. Like, why is he going in that direction when, you know, we've already had 7 years of this? It seems like he's kind of like, I don't know, tanking himself before he even gets started in the general election.
Yeah, well, Gladstone, I'd say that all three of the Republican Republican nominees are basically saying that they're running as George Bush. I mean, all three of them are saying, yeah, we're going to have the, although John McCain actually has been fairly consistent in his positions. George Bush was in favor of John McCain's amnesty bill, which has, or amnesty is probably the wrong, that's the conservative term for it. His let's reform the immigration problem that we have. And that's a legitimate way of saying it, frankly. Bush was in favor of that, and that's what's got the conservatives all worked up. I mean, this is one of the main things that's got them all freaked out. But as they pointed out over at the Center for American Progress, you compare Mitt Romney, Mike Huckabee, John McCain, and George W. Bush, and on taxes, they're all saying, that change in the tax law where we decided to start borrowing money from China and putting that money on the credit card for our children and grandchildren, and then taking that money and giving it to millionaires and billionaires and calling that a tax cut, we want to make that permanent. On immigration, we got to secure our borders. Like, you know, the lack of a fence is the reason why we've got some kind of a problem in the United States, to the extent that we have a problem. You know, I'd say let's take a look at our trade policies to start out. You know, no, it's got to have a fence, you know, and lots of guns there, right? The Iraq, they call it the surge, you know, the escalation of the war. John McCain, some may deny the surge is working, but among the terrorists, there is no doubt. Yeah, right. Terrorists. When people's country is occupied, they want to throw out the occupiers. You can call them terrorists if you want. I don't think most Iraqis would. Iraq withdrawal. We will not resist. We will not rest until this enemy has been defeated again. Who's the enemy? You know, most Iraqis were very pro-American before we showed up. And for the first few weeks, actually, after we showed up, they were very pro-American. But this, ever since, you know, winning the war was fine, you know, in May when Bush stood on that aircraft carrier and said, yep, we won a war, that was fine. But the occupation center, we totally screwed it up. And health care, all the candidates, best way to achieve that goal is by expanding consumer choice, not government control. In other words, you're on your own, Charlie. So, anyhow. Teresa, Napa, California. Hey, Teresa.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. I love you. Thank you for being you.
Thank you.
I'm calling for two reasons, or two questions. One is, do you have any of your books on tape? I drive like a lot of your listeners, and I'd love to be able to listen. Can I go to your website or somewhere?
One of them is Screwed. The economics book that came out last year is out on CD, and also, there's a digital form that you can download on the web. And as far as I can tell, it's over at Amazon.com, and there may be a link from my publisher's site. I'm not sure that there is a link from my own website. I haven't put that up yet because it just became available like about a month ago.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. My second question is about elections. I live in Napa, California, and I'm concerned about our election processes here. Our elections officer closed almost half of our precincts just prior to this election, and he changed some people to mail-in, some people are not. Some precincts were partially open. There's a lot of stuff, and I'm just not comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the main, and your screener has suggested I email you about this for the details, so I won't take your time here.
Sure.
But my main question is, what is the exact process, kind of the physical process of a Republican organization getting a name taken off? Do they send a letter to our elections officer? Do they walk in? How do they prove it? And why does our elections officer believe it and then take a name off?
It depends. It depends on. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Teresa. It depends on the state, but broadly, it's one of these situations where you're guilty until you prove that you're yourself innocent. And the lists of registered Democrats are public information by and large, or in some cases are public information. Perhaps more to the point, in those areas where they're not public information, the demographics, the known demographics, are pretty indisputable. So you can buy a mailing list of all the people who are in a particular zip code. And if you know that that zip code is heavily Democratic, then you send a caging mail out to all those people, you know, that says, please return this card to prove that you're actually registered to vote, or that says to the post office, you know, if this isn't accepted within 24 hours, then return it to us. Now, and then they actually have what they consider to be a physical piece of evidence, which is that the card did not come back, but you can prove that you sent the mailing out, or the mailing bounced back and they've got the piece of evidence. Then they go to the Secretary of State or to the local county clerk or however it happens to be done in whichever particular state, and they say, they swear. Then they have to, you know, typically they have to make an oath or affirmation. You know, to the best of my knowledge, there is evidence that this person, or here is the evidence that this person is registered to vote but is not legally entitled to be registered to vote because they live someplace other than where they're claiming. Because the evidence that we have is that they don't live there anymore. And at that point, the Registrar of Voters takes your name off the list, and when you show up, you have to prove that you, in fact, do live there. And most people are unable to do that because people just don't happen to carry their utility bills with them and their birth certificate with them when they go to the polling places. And so caging is very, very effective, and the Republicans have been doing it aggressively for the past 20 years, even in the face of a court order to stop them from doing it, and they're continuing to do it. And apparently it's happening all over the country. Ellis in Hoboken, New Jersey. Hey, Ellis, what's on your mind?
Yes, hello, Tom. I want to say that I really appreciate and love your show. I appreciate the educational factor and the fact that you link history with the present since they're inextricably connected.
Thank you, Ellis. We have only about a half a minute, though, before a break, so we got a question here.
Okay, what I wanted to say was I was in Orr yesterday. I want to speak on behalf of the women voters that came out there, and to say that it's very unfair to stereotype women voters as being monolithic in their voting patterns. I saw women out there that were for all the candidates,
yeah.
and I thought it was unfortunate, like a week ago when Ted Kennedy had endorsed Barack Obama, they took it as a slight against women voters. But what if the other candidate were Native American and it went the other way? And my point is that one's pain is not greater than the other. This is about all of us coming together, you know, because that was a form of bigotry there. And
yeah,
it's about us coming together. Everybody has issues.
Yeah, well said, Ellis. I agree with you. It seems, you know, from looking at the numbers, it seems like the Latino vote went largely for Hillary Clinton. The African-American vote went largely for Barack Obama. The white vote and the male-female vote just seemed largely to split between the two. So it's hard to make these kind of generalizations. Stick around. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The door. House and bubble, what's the trouble? Was worth 250, but a praise for double. House and bubble, what's the trouble now?
9.5 minutes before the hour. And to the extent that, just to finish up where I left off just before the break, And to the extent that Barack Obama is not pulling in very large numbers the Latino vote, which to some observers is a little surprising in that he's the one who is saying, yes, let's give driver's licenses to illegals. He's being the most liberal, I guess would be the word, on the issue. And Hillary Clinton is saying no driver's licenses to illegals. She, of course, got burned on that issue with the question about Spitzer in New York and all that. But anyhow, to the extent that he's not pulling in that vote, were he to bring in Bill Richardson as his running mate, he would have it, in my opinion. And Bill Richardson's a really good guy. I've met him on a couple of occasions, and very, very smart, very knowledgeable, incredibly experienced. He has the gravitas that would balance, plus he comes from the West, he has the gravitas that would balance what the perceived lack of experience on the part of Barack Obama. On the other hand, Hillary Clinton's best running mate may well be Barack Obama. But I can't see, I just can't imagine that Barack Obama would have Hillary Clinton as a running mate. I'm not sure that she would take it, for that matter, if it were offered. But I don't think that she would be his best choice. 866-303-2270, K in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, K, what's up?
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts with you. I'd like to put my bias up front. For the last 6 months, I've had an Al Gore bumper sticker on my back window in the car.
Oh, good on you. I think all of us would love to see Al Gore.
I want to put that up front because I don't and haven't made a commitment to either Obama or Clinton. I'd like to raise a voice of caution, however, to all my fellow liberals and progressives in your listening audience. And it's really about what I see as a parallel between 1968 and 2008. If I hearken back to 68, because that's when President Johnson was president, Vice President Hubert Humphrey was vice president. President Johnson, at that time, if you recall, you may not be old enough, saw his popularity decline as a result of the war and feeling, the anti-war feeling. Eugene McCarthy at that time saw his political star upwards because of the fine support he received from especially students, anti-war individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's when President Johnson decided he wasn't going to become a candidate, leaving Hubert Humphrey as the heir apparent.
Right.
Of course, Bobby Kennedy got in a race, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of us were doing the Get Clean for Gene in 68 stuff.
Okay.
You know, it's,
we had two bumper
cut your hair.
Stickers. My wife and I had one car, two bumper stickers, one for Kennedy, one for McCarthy.
Right.
Kennedy was killed, went to the convention, Humphrey was picked.
Right.
If you recall, Senator McCarthy's support for the Democratic ticket was tepid at best. And a lot of political observers say he failed to bring the young anti-war student group into the general election campaign.
You don't mean McCarthy, you mean Humphrey.
No, McCarthy. McCarthy did not win the convention. Humphrey became our candidate.
Right.
McCarthy's support of the Democratic ticket after he lost at the convention became tepid.
I see. So he did not continue to bring those people in. I see.
Yeah, and what I'm concerned about is just the other day during an interview, Mrs. Obama was asked, would she support the Democratic ticket? She paused and hesitated.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need that.
No, I agree. I think that was a mistake, and I suspect it's a mistake that she won't make again. And we do have to be united. Democrats do have to be united. That's the way it is. Shirley, thanks for the call. Shirley in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Shirley.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I wanted to talk about the independents, magnetism that Barack Obama brings from the independents, and also McCain. There's a competition going on there.
Yeah, I think
our state is, you know, the independents can't vote. And a lot of independent voters, and I'm assuming they're new.
You have closed primaries on both the Democratic and Republican side in Arizona?
Only Democratic and Republican. No independents can vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that there were a lot of new voters,
mm-hmm.
and there was a lot of independents voting, and they didn't even realize their votes. They weren't supposed to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought up that square box in California, and I felt really sad that the fact is that they were enthusiastic and didn't know, and they left. But I think what I really, really would want, I think it would shed the light on the way we vote in America, is I think our candidates, being that they want our votes, they should use that as part of their stump speech.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And Shirley, let me just, very, very briefly pontificate on the whole issue of closed primaries. I am in favor of closed primaries. And I'm somebody who, throughout my lifetime, has at various times registered as a Democrat or as an independent. Most often as an independent. I go back and forth depending on how I'm, you know, whether or not I want to vote in the primary and where I've lived, frankly, and how active I've been with local politics. And the reason why I think that primaries should be closed is that I don't want Republicans, or for that matter, frankly, independents, messing in the Democratic primary. And I don't think Republicans want independents or Democrats messing in the Republican primary. Hey, it's our club. The Democratic Party is our club, and we should be able to make our own decisions about it. And independent voters, if they want to get with the program, it's not that difficult in most states to simply change the way that you're registered and say, okay, I'm going to be registered as a Democrat instead of an independent. Kenny in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Kenny, we're just a half a minute here before we got to wrap up this hour.
All right, I mean, real quick. First of all, your guest can't, he's starting to get mixed up between a movement and a campaign. A movement don't stop even after the campaigning is done. And another thing is...
I think you're right. I don't think Mark is mixed up about it, but I think you're right. That Barack Obama represents a movement. Hillary Clinton is representing a campaign.
Yeah, and another thing is, at what cost are these insiders in Washington willing to put Hillary in the office?
Well, that's something we're going to see, Kenny, because if this thing ends up, if Hillary Clinton ends up being the nominee only because of superdelegates or only because Florida and Michigan got seated when people went and voted and they were told that it didn't count, there's going to be hell to pay. And that will be a tragedy for the Democratic Party. Up next, what's going on with the Republican Party? Terrence Jeffrey with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone. Tom Hartman. The Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Accept no imitations. Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Okay, we spent our first hour talking about what happened with the Democratic primaries and caucuses yesterday on Super Tuesday. Let's take a look at the Republican ones with our old friend Terry Jeffrey of CNSNews.com, formerly the Cybercast News Service, before that the Conservative News Service, but now CNSNews.com. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Just great. Great to have you with us again. I always enjoy our conversations. I'm really, before we get into the whole, you know, Huckabee, McCain, Romney, circular firing squad, what's going on with the Republicans conversation, which I'd love to have with you, I am baffled by why all the Republican candidates are basically running on the platform of we're going to keep doing exactly what George Bush is doing when George Bush is in the tank.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think that George Bush actually is partly in the tank. I mean, obviously, one reason he's in the tank is the unpopularity of the war in Iraq. But another reason he's in the tank is because he actually walked away from a lot of conservative principles, as exemplified by this $3.1 trillion budget he handed in Monday. And I think, actually, the argument that
But much of that increase was defense spending. I mean, that budget cuts back on environmental programs. It cuts back on low-income heating assistance programs. It cuts back on social welfare programs. It's mostly, you know, a huge boon to the defense country.
Well, there's no doubt defense spending has grown under Bush, but so too have entitlements, and not just the ones that were growing before he got into office.
You think they've grown beyond the level of inflation?
Well, they
and
they
population
have,
growth.
They have, and also you have his Medicare prescription drug plan, Medicare Part D, which the Comptroller General of the United States told the Budget Committee in the Senate last week actually has greater unfunded liabilities now than Social Security.
Oh, we all agree that was a disaster. That was a big wet kiss to the drug companies by Billy Towson, who then got special permission to leave Congress early enough to go take a $2 million a year job as the head of pharma, the lobbying company for the drug company.
Well, you know, there's only 8 senators who voted against this. And by the way, John McCain is one of them, so I'll give John McCain credit for that. But that was a bipartisan bill.
Oh, I know.
Bad news. But yeah, I mean, Bush did, from a conservative perspective, George Bush walked away from a lot of conservative values and principles. And some of the, you know, I think there's some places where, say, Romney and McCain and Huckabee are all trying to claim they're a little bit different from him.
Yeah, I'm not seeing them. I mean, the Iraq withdrawal, they're all, you know, we're going to stay there until this enemy is defeated on the Iraq surge. You know, hey, this is a wonderful thing. We need more escalations.
Right.
On immigration, we need a fence. On taxes, let's take all this money that we borrowed from China and gave to millionaires and billionaires and called it a tax cut. Let's keep that permanent.
There's one place there, Tom, you mentioned where at least two of these candidates are distinct from Bush, and that's on border security and immigration.
Well, boy, even McCain, though, is now talking about we need a fence.
Well, he is.
And he wouldn't answer. He was asked three times by Tim Russert, would you vote for your own bill? And he refused to answer.
Yeah, but he's kind of hedges on the fence. So there's no doubt he wants to create a path to citizenship for the 12 to 20 million illegals in this country. Huckabee used to have that position. Romney maybe had that position, but neither of them take it anymore. So
right.
Immigration is one place where at least Romney and Huckabee are different from Bush. By the way, John McCain, I think, is actually more of an interventionist Wilsonian on foreign policy than George Bush.
I agree with you.
And it's interesting that the liberal media has basically let him get by with that. They, you know, maybe in the general election they're going to turn and they're going to attack McCain for that foreign policy, but truth be told, that was the foreign policy of Bill Clinton when he was president. And back in 2000, it was John McCain who basically agreed with Bill Clinton on foreign policy. George Bush had a different foreign policy.
Well, and before that, you had Reagan, you know, with Grenada, and you had George Bush Sr. with Panama. And, I mean, there's no shortage of Wilsonian interventionist foreign policies on both sides.
Well,
I'll give you that.
But I will say this. With Reagan, with Grenada, we had a treaty organization in the Caribbean that asked us to intervene. You had 600 American medical students.
Let's not redebate that, because those medical students, you know, they were going, what? What's the problem?
And Reagan did pull the Marines out of Lebanon. He didn't try and create a democracy out of Lebanon.
Yeah, you're right. He cut and run. See, I mean, we could spend, rather than trying to re-spin history, let's talk about the present here.
Right.
Here's how it looks to me from the outside, okay? And I don't mean this like, you know, gee, I'm just going to beat up the Republicans. This
sure.
is really genuinely how it looks. You've got one candidate, Mitt Romney, who seems to represent basically the Wall Street Journal wing of the Republican Party, the millionaires and billionaires. He himself is worth some $400 million. He's put $30, $40 million of his own money into his campaign, which is, I think, is the most underreported part of the entire story. That, you know, if that had been done on the Democratic side, I think it would be huge news. And you know, he's advancing the corporate interests. You got John McCain, who's sort of my dad's Republican. My dad died a Republican. You know, I used to, I've told you before, in 64, I walked door to door for Barry Goldwater with my dad when I was 13 years old.
What a wonderful memory.
Yeah, it actually is.
You and Hillary Clinton, by the way.
I know. It actually is. But in any case, the point is that I think John McCain was my dad's kind of Republican, you know, kind of almost a moderate, but not quite. And then you got Mike Huckabee, who's, you know, appealing to the religious right, who the Republicans had been ridiculing as kind of a crazy guy. And now he's really coming on and he's picking up some of this vote. And then you've got all these right wing talk show hosts who are going after John McCain like there's no tomorrow, when he's, you know, all probability going to be the nominee. What's the Republican Party doing to itself here?
Well, first of all, I understand why Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin are going after John McCain. They have good reason to. On almost every major public policy fight over the last 9 or 10 years, John McCain was on the other side from conservatives. And those of us who are fighting for those issues know that. There's just no question. The Bush tax cuts is a big one of them. But, Tom, and I will disagree.
But he later voted for them.
He voted once to extend them. He voted against them, and he called them tax cuts for rich. Now, look, I won't disagree with you that Romney is probably the candidate that the big business Republicans will like the best.
Sure.
But here's a pattern I don't think maybe he got enough attention in the voting yesterday, is that the voting really was regional. The strength of John McCain, the only states where he got over 50% were in the Northeast, New Jersey, New York, of course, in Connecticut. Of course, you know, Massachusetts goes to Romney's home state. But in the South, Huckabee won all the states of the Deep South and almost won Missouri, which is a border state. And then McCain beat Romney in the South. That's a very interesting thing. And in the North and the West, not only did Romney and McCain both beat Huckabee in all the northern and western states, but Ron Paul beat Huckabee in some of the northern states. So I would suggest that underneath this voting, and underneath all the talk about issues, there are really cultural factors at play here.
Mm-hmm.
And people...
It almost seems like there's three Republican parties right now.
Well, there are different Republican parties, and interestingly enough, some of it isn't along ideological lines. Some of it is along cultural lines, and that is an historical tradition in America. You know, okay.
In both parties, frankly.
With both parties, yeah. I mean, look, obviously Mitt Romney is a Mormon. He won Utah huge. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And people understand that. Huckabee is an evangelical Christian. He won big in the South where there's a large population of evangelical Christians. Interestingly enough, McCain could not win a majority in his home state of Arizona. But clearly McCain is a front runner. He clearly still has problems with conservatives. If he's going to have any chance as a Republican nominee, he has to get well with conservatives. It's not clear to me he can do that.
You know, Mitt Romney's positions on most of these, quote, conservative, end quote, issues were 180 degrees different from where they are now, if you just go back like 10 years ago. Do you think that that kind of flip-flopping on Romney's part, which is now being embraced by the party? I was at CPAC last year, and everybody was walking around dressed like dolphins calling Mitt Romney a flip-flopper. They're not doing that. I'll be at CPAC tomorrow. I'm guessing they're not doing that this year. If John McCain flip-flops and becomes the Mitt Romney conservative, will he be embraced or will he be attacked?
You know what? I think if you look at all the presidential candidates left that have any chance of being elected president, all of them are professional politicians. None of them are really conviction politicians, as far as I'm concerned. And I think the truth is, if you look back in American history, conviction politicians that actually get elected president, it is a very rare thing. And so right now, the American people are basically looking at a bunch of people who are, in essence, at least in some areas, opportunists. They're ready to shave their views, change their views in order to gain power. It's a sad thing, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Who would you say, we just have a half a minute here, Terry Jeffries, Jeffrey of CNSNews.com, who would you say were the conviction politicians? Jack Kennedy, Ronald Reagan?
Well, I think that Ronald Reagan clearly was a conviction politician who was elected president of the United States.
I'd put Franklin Roosevelt in that category, even though he was governor of New York, wasn't he, before then?
And I'll take your word for it. He's on the other side philosophically from me.
Yeah.
But
I'd say Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, and
I'm
not
example.
A big fan of Teddy Roosevelt, but Teddy Roosevelt clearly, obviously, I think Abraham Lincoln was one. Clearly, George Washington was one.
Yep.
And
he walked away from the job when they basically wanted him to be king in his third term.
You know, John Quincy Adams was another one.
You're absolutely right. And fighting slavery to the, you know, tooth and nail and really opposing many of his father's policies as well. Interesting. Terry Jeffrey, it's always great talking with you, Terry.
Hey,
thanks for coming on. Terry Jeffrey, CNSNews.com, the website. If you want to check out the Republican perspective and thinking on all this stuff, check it out. 16 minutes past the hour, we'll be taking your calls, 866-303-2270, on the outcome, the fallout of Super Tuesday.
The Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio. Tom Hartman.
And thank you for supporting the radio. Listener-supported radio, the Tom Hartman Program, supported by you, our listeners, supporting the radio station you're listening to us on. I'm telling you, they're precious. I so honor the affiliates that are carrying our show. Thank you so much to them. And the way that you can support your radio station is by supporting their sponsors, letting them know that you're listening to that local radio station that you're listening to. And also our national sponsors, including the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199 who are fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans because they, like I, believe that keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. So your thoughts on all this. You've heard my pontifications and ad absurdum. Let's get into some conversations about this. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Peggy in Torrance, California. Hey, Peggy, welcome to the program.
Hi. Great. Love your show.
Thank you. Wonderful.
I want to talk about something that's not brought up much. I'm really afraid that if the entrenched Washington machine superdelegates overthrow the will of the Democratic voters in either direction, it's going to completely turn off all the new enthusiastic young people and independents and Republican converts that we've just gotten to join the Democratic Party.
I absolutely agree. That's why I said if Hillary Clinton becomes the nominee as a consequence either of superdelegates voting in a brokered convention or Michigan and Ohio being the things that flip it, she's going to have a huge problem in the national election. And I don't think that she wants that. I know Howard Dean doesn't want that. I don't think any Democrat wants that.
Well, let me just add to this a little reasoning. My son is in London. He's a student there and went to great efforts to fax his vote in to vote. He's an Obama fan. But he emailed all of his friends from there saying, be sure at least to vote. Either way, you know, and the young people are all inspired. Okay, but what they see this as is no different than the Supreme Court throwing out Gore. And the reason I say that is that was a set of rules set up by the Washington system somehow, or not overturned by the Washington system, that effectively overpowered the voters.
Yep.
And really, having the Democrats have a special set of insider rules is really looked on as the same thing. I mean, what is the difference? If either the voters' votes count and you get to vote for who you want to as a Democrat, or you effectively have a Supreme Court that is saying, nope, Gore's out, or whoever they select. So I don't think people realize the ramifications, because personally,
they
I
do.
Think Congress is just as important.
No, Peggy, trust me, they do. I've talked to a bunch of Democrats recently, and this is the number one fear of elected Democrats, is that this will happen, because you're absolutely right. Regardless of the reality, I mean, the reality is that, hey, this is the way the system was set up. The Supreme Court was not set up to select the president the way that they did. And in fact, that Supreme Court decision, Bush v. Gore, the basis of that, if you read the decision, they say, first of all, this is not a precedent. In other words, you can't use our decision for anything in the future because it doesn't have any legal basis other than this one case. And secondly, they said that the only reason that they were, basically awarding the presidency to George Bush was because the plaintiff, George W. Bush, would be, and I'm quoting from the decision, would be irreparably harmed, end quote, if they didn't do that. And, I mean, it's like, what? Yep. So that was really abusive process. I don't see this as abusive process, but I absolutely agree with you, Peggy. It will be perceived as such.
Yep.
Hopefully there will be a clear winner who will emerge over the next few weeks and months. And frankly, as I said to Mark earlier, and thank you, Peggy, for the call. As I said to Mark earlier, I think that this process now is going to start to favor Barack Obama. And I think that that's the reason why Hillary Clinton is saying, hey, let's have debates every week. Front runners never, ever say let's have debates every week. It just doesn't happen. And here she is saying let's have debates, and that in my mind says that Hillary Clinton perceives Barack Obama as the front runner, and because he is so much better at retail politics than she is. And I think that the voting results bear that out. Those states where he shows up, the states where he did show up is where he did the best. And when you go in and you parse those numbers and you look at what parts of the states he showed up, those are where he did spectacularly. And now he's got enough time. I mean, Super Tuesday, 20-some-odd states, boom, all at once. How can you? There's no way you could even campaign in California, the whole state, over the course of a month or two and do a reasonable job at retail politics, really showing up where people can see it. But now he's going to have an opportunity to do that. And I think that we'll see. But I think that it's going to have an effect. Max in Pleasant Hill, California. Hey, Max. Got
hey,
a minute before
he,
break
he just made a lot of my point, but I watched I'm here in California, and I watched last night, and everybody wanted to go to bed, so they kind of called California lost. But I looked at the Super Tuesday number, like that's Hillary's best and last chance. I joked to my friend, this is like Salazzo at the table and the Godfather saying, I missed my chance. I'm the hunted one now. She won places she lives next to. And two other states. I mean, Arizona and California were big for her, but Tennessee, that's going to go with her. I mean, here she is in Arkansas for all those years. New York, New Jersey, that was pretty much a lock 2 weeks ago. And I didn't see her take one thing from Obama. He didn't lose one state that he was supposed to win. She lost states she was supposed to win a week ago, big.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'd characterize this as a loss for Hillary Clinton, but it's a huge victory in my mind, a huge victory for Barack Obama, because what it has done, and your point is well taken, Max, what it has done is it has said to everybody in the country, this guy can win elections. This guy is a serious contender, as serious as the standard bearer for the Clinton machine, which is one of the most powerful political machines we've seen in the last 50 years. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
You.
still here. We're not going away. 34 minutes past the hour. I get a note from Nancy here. She says, I tried to get into the chat room, but my browser kept locking up. Can you advise people what we should do if we suspect that we've been a victim of caging? First of all, Nancy, if you can't get into the chat room because your browser's locking up, you probably need the most recent version of Flash. And there's a link on our page to that. I think just flash.com will get you there, but it's but maybe not. I'm not sure. Anyway, you need the most recent update on that. Or Java, I guess it is actually. Try java.com, not Flash. It's Java. And see, you have to get the update. But what should you do if you've been caged? The People for American Way. That's what it was, wasn't it, Chris, Lauren? Yesterday we were talking about it. People for the American Way, PFAW.org, has a phone number. And it's 1-866-OUR-VOTE, right? 866-O-U-R-V-O-T-E. If you think you're a victim of caging or any other voting shenanigans and you want to report it, they are compiling the list. And they'll be looking for patterns. And when they see that there are patterns, they will be sending out, you know, folks to check into this. And they're coordinating this with several other organizations as well. At least that's my understanding. And, you know, hopefully the problems that we're seeing right now in this primary vote will be the flag waving, will be the thing that we'll notice so that we can get undone some of the Republican efforts to suppress the vote, particularly the Democratic vote, that have been ongoing for arguably the last 20 years, but really at a stepped up pace during the years of the Bush administration. This is where I say, don't look at the U.S. attorneys, the U.S. prosecutors who got fired. Look at the ones who weren't fired, the ones who turned their faces, turned their eyes, turned their faces the other way and said, oh, I'm not going to investigate caging in my state. I'm not going to investigate election fraud. Now, we wouldn't do that. I'm telling you, the big scandal, the big U.S. attorney scandal is the guys who are being kept in office. In fact, next week we're going to be talking with Larissa Alexandrovna about what's up with the Siegelman inquiry. It looks like CBS 60 Minutes has just decided to wimp out on doing a special on it. Mind-boggling. So, anyhow, Ted in Verona, New Jersey. Hey, Ted, welcome to the program. Ted, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey. Hello.
Yes.
You are on the air, sir.
Oh. You just mentioned about the caging, and that's primarily what I called up about, and that is that if there's a restraining order from 1982 on the Republicans, then why can't something be done? You know, it indicates that it's illegal. Okay,
yes.
I realize I'm speaking quickly, but we have to stop being victims on things like this. If it's been happening, we know we lost the election in 2000 on the basis of this.
Yeah.
Why are we putting up with this, and why aren't...
Problem, Ted. The agency that is responsible for enforcing federal restraining orders and federal laws is the Department of Justice.
I understand that.
And the Department of Justice is led now by Mukasey, by Gonzalez. These guys are absolute Republican hack partisans.
Tom.
Yeah.
Then why don't we make out? Why don't we know who we should? We should then say, okay, let's have laws that say, for example, I received an official 2008 presidential primary election sample ballot from the Commissioner of Registration, County of Essex, New Jersey. And it says official election mail, and it says on the face, this is all on the face of it, the polling location and the district and when the polls are open.
Right.
Okay. And it's a nonprofit organization, U.S. postage paid. Postmaster, please deliver by February 2nd.
Oh, you've been caged.
Just a minute. Exactly. And it says return service requested.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Which is not what would happen if it was actually coming from the Registrar of Elections. If it's a nonprofit organization, that's not the government. And so you have been caged.
You mean the fact that it says if official election mail and Commissioner of Registration?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You can say anything on the outside of an envelope. You can say anything on the outside of an envelope, as you probably discovered if you've thought you've won $1 million in the past.
Right. Inside it has Christopher J. Durkin, Essex County Clerk, official presidential primary election, and it shows what's going to be on my voting machine.
Right.
And it gives full instructions for voting.
Sure, yeah. It all looks totally legitimate and is, probably. It's all probably totally solid. Here's the kicker, though. On the outside, it says basically to the mailman, if or woman, as the case may be, if this thing can't be delivered, then please return it to us. And that's what that's how the Republicans do caging. And so if you, for example, Ted, had been on vacation, if you were a snowbird, if you're one of the people who spends part of the winter in Florida, for example, you live in New York or New Jersey, if you were a younger person and you were off in Iraq fighting, if you just didn't happen to get your mail that day or it slipped through the cracks somehow and it got bounced back, if you were staying with a friend, you know, young people, if you were off at college, that thing would have got sent back. And what's the exact return address on it?
I beg your pardon?
What's the return address that it has to be?
Commissioner of Registration, 465 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, Newark, New Jersey, 07102.
Okay. What would be interesting is to know what that address is, if it actually is the Commissioner of Registration, or if it is, you know, some surrogate for the Republican Party.
Well, it has Christopher Durkin's, these county clerks.
Well, in some cases, you've got county clerks who are actually doing this kind of basically effectively caging thing as well. I mean, this is Pat, or what's his name, the Secretary of State in Ohio
right.
was doing this, you know, on behalf of the Republicans. So, you know, it may well be that you've been caged by an official. I don't know.
Well,
but it stinks to me.
You mean, in other words, but they're sending me instructions.
Yeah, which is theoretically a good thing, but the bounce back part of it means that if you didn't get if it got bounced back, then if you showed up at the polls, your vote would not be counted. So actually, you know, I can't say absolutely, Ted, that you've been the victim of caging or that this is some nefarious thing.
I'm not a victim of it.
Because you received it, yeah. Because it didn't get bounced back.
Right.
But this is the nature of much of the way that a lot of caging has been done around the country. It's getting more and more subtle, and increasingly it's being done more and more by officials, particularly Republican officials. So, you know, I beyond that I can't say. But Ted, I got to move along. Thanks for the heads up, and maybe one of our listeners in New Jersey will recognize that address and can let us know whether that actually is the Commissioner of Elections, or whether it's going back to the RNC or something like that. Diana in North Carolina. Hey, Diana, you've been on the line for a while here. Thank you for holding.
Oh, no problem.
What's up?
Excuse me?
What's up?
Oh, am I on the air?
You are.
Oh. I was calling about your conversation yesterday, actually, so to change the subject, on global warming.
Okay.
And a little nervous. I'm not a speaker here. But my background is in mechanical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people have had physics or chemistry in high school. And do you remember learning about latent heat?
I do.
Well, this is why you don't...
Along with Brownian motion?
Huh? Yeah. Well, latent heat is when you change phases. You go from, like, ice to water,
mm-hmm.
water to air. When you go from ice to water, you absorb 80 calories, mm-hmm. but the temperature does not change.
Right.
Okay, this is what creates the buffer in our, basically, system.
Yeah, I thought that was called changing states, not changing phases.
Yeah, changing states.
Okay.
You can call it that, too.
Yeah. Right.
That works. A little nervous.
Sorry, I'm an old science wonk, although I'm not always right.
No, so. That's cool. No, you're right.
So anyhow, your point about this is?
My point about it is this is our buffer. This is why you do not see the temperature rising. But the energy in our system is rapidly increasing. That's why the scientists...
Oh, because ice is converting to water and it's releasing all those calories even though they're not...
No, it's absorbing those calories. When you go from ice to water, you absorb 80 calories.
Ah, yeah. Okay. And so that's where the energy is going.
The energy is going into that. That's why you're getting more water in the air.
Right.
The energy in our system is rapidly increasing.
Right.
You're not going to see the temperature go up till it's too late.
Right. And that's the problem. We're seeing increasing climate instability.
Uh-huh. And you're putting more energy in the climate.
Yeah. In fact, tonight I was going to be flying to Washington, D.C. I'm in New York right now doing the show, and I'm going to do the CPAC conference tomorrow from Washington, D.C., and I called the airline last night and I said I'd like to cancel that flight because they're predicting wild thunderstorms here tonight, and so I'm going to take Amtrak. I just don't like flying through thunderstorms.
Exactly.
And it's like the weather has gone nuts, and it's going nuts because there's more energy in the atmosphere.
In the system.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
once the temperature starts going up, it's way too late.
Yeah.
So if they keep arguing with you about, well, the temperature is not going up, global warming is really not a good name for it.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is actually the temperature is going up. There was that period from 1950 until the 1970s when pollution was dramatically increasing with the industrialization, not just of the United States and Europe, but much of the rest of the world, but particularly in the United States and Western Europe and in the Soviet Union. And then in the 70s, everybody started figuring out that this is not good for us. You know, it's not good for our climate. It's not good for our environment, but mostly it's not good for people, you know, asthma and all those kind of things. And so we started the Environmental Protection Agency here and corollary agencies in Europe started cutting back on that particulate pollution. And so we stopped reflecting so much sunlight. And then, the world started that had actually been cooling down the planet. Diana, thank you for the point. It's well made. And I appreciate the call. And thank you for listening to the program. 45 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270. TomHartmann.com. Drop into our live chat room.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartmann Program.
And who's going to be the one to say it was no good what we done? I dare a man to say I'm too young, for I'm going to try for the sun. We huddled in the derelict building, and when he thought I was asleep, he lay his poor coat round the shoulder and shivered there beside me in a heap. And who's going to be the one?
I could listen to Donovan for hours.
It was no good.
Welcome back. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com on the internet and all over the world, based out of Washington, D.C., and an accredited member of the White House Press Corps. Hey, Victoria.
I had two posters on my wall. I had Mark Bolan and I had Donovan.
Really?
Yes.
Amazing. Well, there's a little bit of nostalgia for you.
Yes.
I actually heard, Louise and I went and heard Donovan perform live just about 5 or 6 years ago. He's still around, or he was then, and he did a beautiful performance. And a lot of it, I'd say 80% of it was new stuff, and it was just as good as his old stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's still, still writing songs and still playing music. Or he was, you know, 5, 6 years ago.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was at a conference I was speaking at, and he was, you know, it was one of these conferences with, you know, 100 different speakers kind of thing, a Green Fest kind of thing, and he was one of the entertainment thing. Anyway, but we digress. What's happening in Washington, D.C.?
Well, obviously, all the talk today is about the election, so we can certainly go there because we've got our own primaries coming up in a week's time. But there's a story that's not getting talked about that I just briefly want to draw to your attention. I'm sure you're already aware of it, but it isn't getting any attention. And that was a Senate hearing yesterday, the Senate Intelligence Committee. Both General Michael Hayden, director of the CIA, and also Mike McConnell, director of National Intelligence, they testified. And Mike McConnell told lawmakers that not only are Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri still in control of al-Qaeda and promoting a new generation of lieutenants, but also they're also improving the last key aspect of their ability to attack the U.S., producing militants, Western recruits capable of blending into American society, but they're also gaining in strength from their refuge in Pakistan and steadily improving their ability to recruit, train, and position operatives capable of carrying out attacks inside the United States.
In other words, the Bush administration has totally blown it.
That raises the question of exactly what the Bush administration is doing.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible. There was also the FISA hearings and the waterboarding hearings, and we talked about the FISA hearings at some length yesterday. This administration, this new book that's out, I've got to talk to Sean about getting the author of this new book out that just came out, and I guess it hit the stands today, suggesting that Condoleezza Rice, that the guy who was in charge of making sure that the 9/11 Commission, you know, not the head commissioners, but the guy
Zelnick.
Zelnick, thank you. The guy who was in charge of kind of organizing, coordinating everything, in the background was having regular conversations with Karl Rove, and the commission was inclined to basically say that 9/11 happened because Condoleezza Rice was asleep at the switch and got that changed. And
right, and the commission, which was very well intentioned and in my opinion did a pretty good job, was kept from information.
That's right.
By this guy.
That's right. That's right. And so anyhow, we will be doing a show on that next week as the election stuff cools down, and I'll be in Washington D.C. tomorrow and the next day for CPAC. You gonna be by CPAC by any chance?
I probably should go by CPAC. Actually.
Drop by between noon and three, and I'll put you on the air. You can give us your impressions as a real reporter and actually somebody with some good insights and a reasonable point of view.
Where's it being held?
It's at the Omni Shoreham Hotel.
The Omni Shoreham. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll see if I can do that. It should be good for a laugh.
Yeah.
It's like a Star Trek convention. So.
Oh, it's so weird. It's like all the clones. All these young people are wearing $700 suits, and all the old people look like televangelists. And you know, it's so completely different from Democratic events where most people were wearing blue jeans. I was the only person wearing blue jeans at last year's CPAC.
Oh, I'm sure you were.
It was I probably will be tomorrow.
Why did they let you in? Why did they let you in?
I think I'm their token liberal, you know.
You are. You're probably the only person with a beard, I should think.
It was amazing the number of people who would work their way down the row, you know, like Mitt Romney and some of these guys. They work their way down the row of all the conservative talk show hosts, and then they see me and they see the Air America sign, and they just get up and walk off. It was like... Anyhow, what else is going on in Washington, D.C., Victoria?
Well, obviously a lot of focus now is being put on the primaries, the ones that take place on Saturday, but also next week. Here in Washington, we're focusing on ours because we have Washington, Virginia, and D.C., which are going to be interesting because Virginia, there's a feeling, we don't have polls out yet, but there's a feeling that could go for Obama being a southern state. Mm. Maryland, there's a feeling it could go for Hillary Clinton. D.C., of course, being largely African-American, 65% African-American, there's a feeling that could go for Obama. So it's a split area and an area that normally doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, and
for the first time in many years, it's actually going to matter.
And in Washington State, where we're on the air on three different radio stations right now, it is particularly bizarre in that there are caucuses on Saturday, which will determine the delegates, and then there's a primary on, I think it's Monday or Tuesday, which will, on the Republican side, pick delegates, but on the Democratic side, pick nothing. The actual primary is purely a beauty contest. And it's an odd thing. And so to our listeners in Washington State, if you want to have a say in who the delegates are that are going to the convention, participate in the caucuses, which I'm pretty sure are this coming Saturday, days hence.
There's also been, I don't know if you've heard about this conference call, this Clinton campaign conference call, in which Hillary Clinton's pollster, Mark Penn, has repeatedly been referring to Obama as the establishment candidate.
What?
This is the new thing. Yes, apparently suggesting that because he's been saying the more that Senator Obama has shifted to becoming an establishment campaign based on endorsement, he's becoming an establishment.
Oh, because
candidate.
A lot of people in the establishment like him. That makes him, because Teddy Kennedy, who's been around forever, supports him. He's therefore an establishment candidate, for example.
Exactly. So she's the insurgent now.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, up is down. But, you know, that's what every campaign has to do. I'm sure the Obama campaign has their share of spin going on, too. But interesting. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Where smart people get their news. Now, speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Well, sometimes I go off half-cocked, and apparently I did in the last segment. Guy calling from New Jersey. It's interesting, I've gotten two emails. One saying that, no, that's not the registrar's email address, or postal address, rather. It is the New Jersey Division of Elections is actually at 44 South Clinton Avenue, 7th floor, P.O. Box 304, Trenton. And I'm actually looking at the Office of the Attorney General's website. But on the other hand, then somebody else said, no, actually, I'm pretty sure that is the address. I think I've been there. And I got a note here from Rick. He says, we all receive sample ballots in California. They are official. On the back is a box that says, nonprofit organization, U.S. Postage Page, Sonoma County, Register of Voters. return service requested. He says it's official. And he said he called and said, why do you say return service? He said, we want to know if they've moved. So you're right, Rick. And the important point is if you move or if you have moved or if you do move or if you have any doubts at all about the legitimacy of your legitimacy is the wrong word, about whether you're registered correctly, call and check it out or go down and check it out. It's well worth the effort. Austin Hill is with us. Austin Hill is, hang on just a second here. Austin, I lost my page. Austin Hill, talk show host of the Fox News Talk Radio Network, frequent guest host for 630 WMAL in Washington, D.C., and 1080 KRLD in Dallas, and the author of White House Confidential, The Little Book of Weird Presidential History, local columnist for the Arizona's East Valley Tribune newspaper. And Austin, welcome to the program.
Tom, good to be back with you. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's get the conservative take here on Obama Republicans. You've been writing about this, and I find it an interesting phenomenon.
I sure do, too. I think the short answer is to say that whether anybody really wants to admit this or not in the Republican Party, the general consensus is that Mrs. Clinton would be much easier to defeat in November than Mr. Obama. I have been very impressed personally with Barack Obama and his campaign. I've been familiar and at least aware of who he is for about 8 years now, but have certainly been paying close attention ever since he launched his presidential campaign, particularly during the fall months of last year and so far this year. I just think he's done a phenomenal job. And
now, how do we? Yeah, there's this old phrase, "Damn you with faint praise." How do we know, Austin Hill, that when conservatives come out and say, you know, at Barack Obama, he's going to be harder to beat than Hillary Clinton, that doesn't cause Democrats to say, oh, okay, well, let's elect him. And then in your back pocket, you've got this, let's see, his middle name is Hussein. We're going to take that viral, nasty, nasty email, lie, full of lies, and we're going to turn that into a national campaign, just like the SWPO veterans did against John Kerry. We've got to figure it out. We're going to take the Harold Ford ad, you know, where the white girl says, hey, Harold, call me. And, you know, boom, he falls, you know, just in the last couple of days, you're all set to play the race card or something like that. I mean, how do we know that you're actually, this isn't part of an elaborate plan to screw up the Democratic Party?
Well, at least all I can tell you is my perceptions of things, Tom. There may very well be dirt on Barack Obama. I think there probably
is. I'm not suggesting that there is dirt. I'm suggesting that we, and frankly, Hillary Clinton has the same liability to the extent that it is. And frankly, I think, in my opinion, it's time for America to get over it. But their misogyny is alive and well. Rush Limbaugh ran the Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox commercial. You know, the ladies tired of taking abuse or a hard time from your guys. Get the Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox. I mean, there's misogyny, hatred of women out there. There's sexism, and there is racism, and also fear of people whose middle name is Hussein, which even though he's not a Muslim and has never been a Muslim, that's going to be the meme that they're putting out. It's the meme that they already are putting out. So, I mean, these things are going to come after them when they go up against a white guy, which is the inevitable thing coming out of the Republican Party.
Well, Tom, I don't disagree with any of that. I would just point out that in my view, and all I can speak from is my own gut, my own mind, in my view, it's been former President Bill Clinton that has made race a matter of Barack Obama's campaign. I'll tell you this. As you pointed out, I'm a columnist for townhall.com, which is a very conservative news and commentary website. I write a regular weekly column there. I've been very impressed with Obama, and I believe he stayed above the board, so to speak, in the face of some very nasty attacks from the former president, some very divisive attacks. I'd been thinking about this for several weeks, and finally, a couple weekends ago, it was the weekend of the South Carolina primary, I published an article there at townhall.com. It was kind of written in the format of an open letter to Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. I didn't entitle it that, but I said, in essence, Mr. Obama, I've been critical of some of your ideas in the past. You may be surprised to see my compliments here, but this raises a very important point. I can criticize ideas, but talking about your character and your demeanor and conduct is something different. That's what I'm doing here. And thank you.
But in this, you
the tone of politics.
Yeah, but I have your article in front of me. Dear Mr. Obama, you're right, from the January 27th issue of townhall.com. But what you say is, you know, you're right. Your assertions from the past week is absolutely correct. You are, all caps, running against quote, both Clintons, end quote. I mean, so it's not like there are Republicans out there who are saying, yeah, Barack Obama, you know, I agree with his position on the war and on health care and on Social Security.
And Tom, I'm not making that claim. I will tell you this. A friend of mine who is a writer, he's a fellow writer of mine with Freedom Newspapers. He writes at the Orange County Register in California. I'm sure many of your KTLK listeners in Los Angeles are familiar with him, whether they like him or not. His name is Stephen Greenhut. He said it best. He said, Barack Obama could become the president that I merely disagree with, not despise. And I'm simply saying that there are a lot of us conservative Republicans out there that are saying, you know, this guy's a breath of fresh air. I may not vote for him, but I'm not opposing him with a vengeance. Please, dear God, don't give us another 4 years minimum of the Clintons in the White House.
This is interesting. Here we had Ann Coulter last week suggest that if John McCain was the nominee of the Republican Party, that she, and Hillary Clinton was the nominee of the Democratic Party, that she would vote for Hillary Clinton.
Uh-huh.
In my mind, that falls into the category of Anne is basically like Paris Hilton. I mean, she's famous for being famous, you know, and so she's going to say anything that's going to get her headlines, and it did.
I'm trying to avoid that status, by the way.
Well, good on you. No, you're.
I don't mind being more famous.
You're famous as a consequence of the substance that you have, Austin, and people can read about it at AustinHill.net, by the way, on the web. But are you suggesting that if John McCain is the nominee of the Republican Party, and it certainly looks like he's going to be,
yes,
and there is this ongoing circular firing squad, particularly among conservative talk show hosts and others within the Republican Party, that there are a lot of Republicans, and Barack Obama is the nominee of the Democratic Party, that there are a lot of independents or Reagan, I don't even want to call them Reagan Democrats, just, you know, folks who came into the party with Reagan,
mm-hmm.
Reagan perspective Republicans, let's call them, you know, who kind of think that he was, you know, the things he talked about were actually what he did, that they would vote for Barack Obama?
I think that Mr. Obama could take a significant number of them, not a majority by any means, but I think an Obama versus McCain matchup gives the country a very clear and very interesting, very decisive choice between old school and very young, fresh new school. I would suspect that McCain will defeat Obama or Hillary Clinton, either one, but I think Obama would have a better chance of winning in that sort of scenario.
How would he defeat either one of them when on virtually every policy, including his immigration reform, he and George Bush, there's no daylight between the two of them, and Bush's popularity ratings or approval ratings are in the tank.
You're speaking of Mr. McCain?
That's right.
Well, things change over the course of campaigns, don't they?
He's going to change his policies?
Well, listen.
He had an opportunity to back when it looked like it was going to kill his candidacy altogether, and he didn't.
He did. I would maintain that's one of the virtues, one of the, I think, the longstanding unmovables with John McCain is that he will stake out a position and he sticks to his guns even when the chips are down. And I think a lot of independents and perhaps some Democrats as well find that admirable. Mm. As it regards to the immigration,
I think that makes him harder to beat. Frankly.
I think that's correct. As it regards the immigration thing, I would maintain that the problem with the so-called comprehensive immigration reform plan was that it was a horribly fumbled, horribly screwed up, mismanaged PR issue from the administration. I think
it was badly handled all the way around. I think we can agree on that.
The ideas are altogether bad.
On both sides. AustinHill.net, the website. Austin Hill, the talk show host and Fox News correspondent, author of White House Confidential, the little book of weird presidential history, and many other things. Austin, thanks for being with us.
Tom, always good to talk to you. Have a great day.
Thank you. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is interesting. Over at one of the libertarian blogs, This is the NolanChart.com blog, Liberty Hill. It's a libertarian blog. John McCain, born in Panama. Apparently he was born in Panama. His dad was in the service. And they're saying, okay, this guy was born outside the United States. This is the apparently the new, I don't think it's Ron Paul, but the, you know, his compatriots, the new meme. He's born outside the United States. He is not a U.S. citizen. Therefore, he doesn't qualify to be president of the United States because the 14th Amendment clearly says, not just the 14th Amendment, the Constitution says that to be president, you have to be, Article 2, Section 1, no person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. So if somebody's born on a military base, well, see, I always thought military bases were U.S. territory. But then they say, but if an Iraqi woman comes into a U.S. military base and has a baby, that baby's not considered an American citizen. At which point I start scratching my head and going, oh, that's odd. So anyhow, who knows? I don't know. 1-866-303-2270. Barbara in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Barbara, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Terrific show.
Thank you.
Fabulous show.
I'm having
a couple comments about your prior callers. The fellow that was just on and you were talking about smear campaigns with Limbaugh and the rest. I think we're at a point now we've had a belly full of all that. And we're in crisis, and it's time for a change.
Yeah.
And I would hope some enterprising district attorney, wherever Limbaugh is, would take him to task with federal hate crime laws if he keeps it up.
For playing things like Brock the Magic Negro on his radio program?
Exactly. There? You can't say that on the street.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can, but it's very tasteless, and I'm even uncomfortable repeating it on the air here, except that, you know, it's the news, but... But, yeah, well said, Barbara. I think we are past it. I thank you for your comment. Absolutely. America is, we're over it. And let's move on. Deb in Eugene, Oregon, you want to disagree with me? You go right to the front of the line.
Hi. Yes, I do. Your analysis of what would happen over a Dem split vote, I disagree with that. And I see it as slightly sexist. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a more or less equal playing field of election here, even though it's screwy with the delegates and everything. It's equal. The two people are playing the same game with the same rules.
In other words,
wait a minute. Let me finish, please.
Sure.
Okay. This is my time. I waited a long time for this.
You're
if,
okay,
Obama wins, if Obama wins, for, you know, delegates, whatever, however it comes across, you and I know that Hillary will see it as her job immediately to unite the party for the general election.
Right.
We know that's true. Okay, however, if Hillary wins, for whatever reason, blah, 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 Obama has already been making no indications that he would do the same, and instead...
No, that's not true.
Wait, excuse me,
I'm going to interrupt you, Deb. In fact, not only am I going to interrupt you, I'm going to put you on hold for a moment. Conversation occasionally allows people to interrupt each other. Deb just hung up on me. Okay. Obama has been asked straight out, will you vote for the Democratic nominee, whoever he is? And he said yes. I just wanted to interject that, and then I would have been pleased to let you finish your point. But sorry. If you want to try and filibuster me, ain't going to happen. Arlene in Flat Rock, Michigan. Hey, Arlene.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am well, but I'll get better. Thank you.
Oh, I got to tell you, I hear you a lot better through my phone than through my radio.
Oh, well.
It's amazing.
Uh-oh.
I've had to hold the phone away from my ear the whole time because it was so loud.
But
the reason I was calling was I just kind of wanted to explain the Michigan primary a little bit about what happened with that, is that the candidates, Democratic candidates, actually had a choice whether to leave their name on the ballot or not. And I happened to be home from work the day I had MSNBC on, and they were announcing that Edwards was removing his name from the Michigan ballot. Shortly after that, they said Obama was, and then they said they were waiting to hear from Hillary Clinton. Well, I immediately popped up and called her office, and I was saying, please, 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 please beg her not to take her name off of our ballot. It's dissing the citizens of Michigan. And apparently they were getting a lot of calls, blah, blah, blah. But so a few hours later, they made the announcement that she had decided to keep her name on the ballot. So I have not heard anyone say that actually Edwards and Obama had a choice. And they actually, and I was telling the lady who, you know, when you first call, who answers the phone, that I'm almost 100% sure it was on another Air America show that we were being told that don't believe that you are not going to have delegates at the convention, because they said the Democratic Party is not going to disenfranchise an entire state. Yeah. So they almost.
I have said that that's my opinion, that at the end of the day they're going to have to allow, and that's why I was encouraging people on the day of the Michigan election to get out and vote, and if you're not going to vote for Hillary Clinton and you want to vote for somebody else, to vote uncommitted.
Right, and a lot of them did.
Yeah, and a lot of people did, but I do think that, frankly, after all of the candidates, believing that all of the other candidates would keep the commitment, when all of the candidates, including the Clinton campaign, made the commitment not to put their name on the ballot, and then the Clinton campaign decided to keep her name on the ballot.
They made the commitment not to campaign, but they said you cannot campaign, but you can keep your name on the ballot.
Okay. Arlene, I'll have to check that out. Thank you for that.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Okay, here's the latest count. Obama, 838. Clinton, 834. At least, according to NBC. That's interesting. So it's been going back and forth all day long. I mean, these numbers are you know, enough to make you dizzy. So, anyhow, bottom line, I just want to be on the record as saying I think either one of them would make a great president, and I would, in a heartbeat, vote for either one of them. And Don the Green Dog Democrat in our chat room says, Tom, I know I was born on an army base in Germany. The key is that one must have one's parent, who is a U.S. citizen, on a duty of assignment at said military base. In that case, one is considered as born on American soil. He says, I know this one well, therefore McCain is eligible. He says, my brother was born on an army base in Germany, but my dad was stationed in Vietnam at the time, and he had to become naturalized. He didn't get it automatically like me. So, interesting. Makes sense. I mean, otherwise, how are you going to get people to join the military? Hey, your kid, if your kid is born, or join the diplomatic corps or anything else. Well, if your kid is born while you're on service, not a citizen. Sorry. Ain't going to happen, obviously. Ain't going to happen. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Judith in New York City. Hey, Judith.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for an always informative show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up on what the other caller was saying briefly. I think she was alluding to the law of unintended consequences when she was discussing, you know, supporting the other candidate. My husband and I voted for Hillary because of her health care plan. Our 29-year-old son voted for Obama, and he's never been big on voting. And today's New York Times editorial states that when Michelle Obama was on Good Morning America on Monday, when she was asked if she would support Mrs. Clinton, she said, I'd have to think about that.
Right.
Now, if that's a message that's going out there too, I can just use my son as an example, he's probably not going to vote. Or perhaps he could be persuaded, despite everything I say and stand on my head and bounce, to vote for McCain, and, you know, a horrifying prospect. So we may be electing McCain in that way. I think that's a dangerous thing for her to say.
I agree. And in the first hour of this program, I condemned her for that. I said. I think that was absolutely wrong for Michelle Obama to have said that. And I added, and I believe this to be true, and we'll see in the next 24 hours, that I predict that she will fall over backwards to retract that.
Okay. I hope you're right. I didn't hear at the beginning of the show. I'm very happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, because that is such a huge political blunder. Is such a huge political blunder.
Yeah, I really think that's dangerous, particularly when they have gotten the support of so many of the young people, and I know exactly how it would play out in my household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny, the email I'm getting the other day, I was talking about how I thought that I was more in alignment with Hillary Clinton's health care plan, because I think that mandates are the only way you're going to get something than with Barack Obama's. That got me a whole bunch of hate mail. What? You don't like Barack
Obama?
And now I'm getting hate mail from people saying, oh, you just had a guy on saying Republicans are going to vote for Barack Obama. You know, You know, I'm tired of you hating Hillary.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I like them both.
I like them both also, but I'll tell you something. In my family, my husband came from a draconian background of poverty, which really scarred him well into adulthood. And he did not put aside in the teacher's retirement annuity any money. And he didn't even discuss it with me for years because he was so fearful because he thought we couldn't afford it. So I said to him, do you realize that we really wouldn't have Social Security unless it were mandated?
Right.
And our son is uninsured. So I really believe it's perception and reality. Even if you could afford a few dollars and it's low care, low cost health care,
yep,
you don't put it aside. There's always something else that the money goes
That's
for.
That's just human nature. You're
yeah.
absolutely right. Judith, thank you so
you
much for the call.
Thank you very
much. Yep, good talking with you. William in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, William, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom. I was election site manager at Sweeney Elementary in Santa Fe.
Well, good on you, William.
Yeah, I had a woman come in. She wasn't on my signature rolls, and she said, Tom Hartman told her not to vote on a provisional ballot, and that was the only way I could let her vote. And she said she had called the county clerk's office, and they told her she voted at a precinct 60-something,
mm-hmm,
but she failed to write that number down. And I had six precincts, and I had 64, 66, 67, but not all of the 60s,
mm-hmm,
and she probably needed to vote somewhere else.
Yeah.
And since the caucus was a party-run event, based on the Secretary of State's list, you know, there was no deliberate attempt to disenfranchise her. So
sure.
The voter still needs to do some homework on these things.
Yeah, that's my point, is that if you are voting on a provisional ballot because you've been caged, because you've been bounced out like 90,000 people in Florida were in the 2000 election, or who knows how many people in Ohio, or in Las Vegas, they actually busted these guys for having people sign things that they thought were petitions that were actually changing their registration from one party to another. And we saw it, the same thing happened in Portland, Oregon. This roving company that was traveling around the country, having people sign a petition to legalize pot or something for medical purposes. And then underneath they say, oh, and I need you to sign copy two and copy three. And underneath the copy two and copy three are actually voter registration cards that are changing their party registration. And, I mean, this is like dirty tricks that were being played, right? And so if you have any doubts about that, if you have any concerns about that, you need to contact folks like you, William. You need to contact people like you. Contact the county registrar. Contact people who are working with the Elections Bureau and say, hey, you know, am I registered to vote? And what party am I registered to vote with? And mm-hmm. and if I'm not, how do I fix that right now? And this is why I think that we need same-day registration all across the United States. I believe that there are 9 states now that have same-day registration.
Well, Tom, our group, the Voter Services Coalition in New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
we've worked 7 years to try to get same-day voter registration, and the Republicans always defeat it in committee. They say
yep.
that, you know, no Republican needs that kind of a bill.
That's right. And that goes back to the point of the Republicans are always trying to suppress the vote because they know that when the will of the majority is exercised, then it doesn't always work for the best interests of the very small minority of wealth, of massive inherited wealth and corporate power. So anyhow, William, thank you very much for the
thank
call.
You.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Steve in Venetia, California. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I've got a couple quick questions about Barack Obama. And I think we better get answers before he gets the nomination because the Republicans will most certainly clobber him with these. First one is, Illinois has more nuclear power plants certified to operate than any other state in the union. What is Barack Obama's position on nuclear power?
Yeah, it's a good question. It was asked in one of the debates, and basically what he said was that he was not in favor of new nuclear power plants unless it could be demonstrated that they were safe, which I took to be a totally ambiguous answer. In the past, I believe that he's been largely in support of nuclear power. Where he is now or where he's going to go with that, I don't know. And I would like to hear, I'd like to know. Weldon in Minnesota. Hey, Weldon. Thank you for the call, by the way. Hey, Weldon.
Hi, Tom. I don't really want to make light of the tragedy that happened in the southern states with the tornadoes yesterday, but I just found it interesting that Bush came down there and said, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Literally?
And I know how you like to play that Reagan-esque.
Yeah, I don't have my contraption with me here, you know, traveling in New York, or I would, but he literally said those words?
Well, he didn't say it exactly in those words, but
uh-huh.
He said, the government is here to help or something.
Oh, amazing.
And oh, I was just like, aren't all these Reaganites supposed to be scared of that phrase?
Yeah, that's a soundbite I've got to be looking for. Weldon, thanks a lot for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. Ron in Essex, Vermont. Hey, Ron.
Hi, Tom. You know, I'm 52, and, you know, I tell my kids, they're in college, about my parents who grew up in a North Ward in North New Jersey, and it was, you know, primarily Italian. And I was telling them about, you know, ethnic neighborhoods, and to them, it is so foreign,
mm-hmm.
You know, especially being in Vermont, I guess. But, you know, today, the kids associate with all kinds of people.
That's right. This generation, I see this with my own kids, you know, who are 24, 29, and 33, I think. And they just don't see color. I mean, they have friends of a wide variety of colors and sexual preferences and fill in the blank. I mean, you know, lifestyle, whatever you want to call it. And they just don't see that stuff the way that the people of your generation and my generation did, and certainly the way that the people of our parents' generation did, big time. You're spot on, Ron. And it's a wonderful thing for America. It really is. I really think we're starting. I realize racism and sexism are still with us big time, but we're starting to get over it. Dave in Los Angeles. Hey, Dave. Got a minute before the break here. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to mention, I found something fascinating over the last week and culminating last night in the in Super Tuesday, and that is this attack on McCain by the right-wing radio shows, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that it seems to be a brief glimpse into the fears of that group of people, Norquist, Tom DeLay, all these people who have taken control and pushed that Republican Party so far right. And they are scared to death at this time of McCain coming in. I think that they fear that either way, that their days are numbered.
Yeah, see, this is the Wall Street Journal Republicans. These are the, you know, I mean, Rush Limbaugh is worth over $100 million. These are the multimillionaire Republicans, wing of the Republican Party, saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, we want to defend the interests of inherited wealth and corporate power first and foremost. We're happy to use wedge issues like sexuality, gay marriage, you know, flag burning, you know, fill in the blank, right? Pledge of Allegiance, God and the Pledge of Allegiance. We're happy to use wedge issues to get average people to vote for us, but the bottom line is economic. And McCain hasn't always danced to that tune, and that's got him scared. Dave, thanks for the call. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the supply side economics. Dave, thanks for the call and thanks for the point. 45 minutes past the hour.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
As I walked out tonight in the mystic garden, the wounded flowers were dangling from the vine. I was passing by a young cool crystal fountain. Someone hit me from behind. Ain't talking, just walking through this weary world of the world.
Welcome back. The Tom Harbin brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Because keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Just a heads up, by the way, tomorrow and Friday, February 7th and 8th, I'll be at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. On February 15th, that's next Friday, a week from Friday, I'll be in Reno, Nevada, 5 to 7 p.m., a book talk and signing at Borders on Virginia Street in Reno. And we'll be doing our show, I believe, from our Reno affiliate there. And on February 16th, that's Saturday, I'll be in Los Angeles, a week from Saturday, I'll be the keynote speaker for Mensa in Los Angeles, the society of people who are a lot brighter than me. So that's going to be great fun. Anyhow, welcome back. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Don in California. Hey, Don, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. We were watching the election last night, my wife and I. She's an independent, I'm a Democrat. And we live in Santa Barbara County. which and we're right on the border of San Luis County, right on the elbow of California. And we were watching CNN's coverage and how they were able to break down states by counties and show how counties are voting and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And they had our county and San Luis County basically under, you know, having Hillary Clinton as winning our counties. And yet at 11 o'clock that night when we're watching our local news, they showed Obama winning both Santa Barbara and San Luis County by a pretty good margin, you know, mm-hmm. 50 to 30% or so.
Yeah.
And so I was just, you know, it kind of struck me as odd. And also I wanted to...
Well, it's just the percentage of the vote comes in. I mean, when they get 20% of the vote, you have very often a very different result than when you've got 80% of the vote.
Well, this was at 11 o'clock at night, and by that time I think they had 50 or 60% of the vote already counted for both of our counties. And like I said, it was pretty wide margin for Obama. As a matter of fact, they basically said, you know, they were in their way calling that both of these counties went to Barack Obama, and yet,
mm-hmm.
but yet nationally they were showing us as being Clinton counties, and I thought that was a little odd. And then the other little discrepancy was my wife, as I said, was an independent, and she went into our little voting area here that we go to every year, and for some reason they had a problem getting her a Democratic ballot. She wanted to vote with a Democratic ballot, and they kind of looked at her like a deer in the headlights, like, you know, what are you talking about? And it took about a good 10 minutes for them to get squared away and get her a ballot and everything. And then they handed us both the wrong kind of pens.
Mm.
We're supposed to use felt pens, and we marked them in ballpoint. And luckily, one of them caught us right as we were sticking them into the little machine. One of them said, well, wait a minute, what kind of pen did you use? And so we had to remark them in felt pen. And
right.
Just a lot of little inconsistencies that had never really happened before.
Yeah.
And,
well, there's, you know, the elections are exploding. I mean, more people are voting in America. The last three elections have seen more people vote, or the last three elections than every other year. Each one has seen more people vote than ever voted before in the history of the United States. And so you've got a lot of new people coming out to work in the election, you know, to in some cases volunteer, in some cases have a job, but a lot of them are volunteers who are helping out. It used to be kind of the province of the little old ladies. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I'd go with my parents to vote, and it was always the Women's League of Voters, which always seemed to me, you know, 10 years old, like they were a bunch of little, they were probably my age now, but you know, whatever. But now there's a whole new generation of people, of young people and middle-aged people who are getting involved in volunteering, and for many of them, this is their first election. And I think that we need to cut them some slack. I mean, on the other hand, yeah, you know, let's work on the training and things. But Deborah Bowen is the Secretary of State in California, and she's a good person. She's been on this program a couple times, and I know that she's doing the very best job she can. It's just, it's a huge state. But Don, thanks for the call, and I get the point, and we do need to clean up our elections as much as possible. Scott in Imperial Beach. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. At the bottom of the hour, as you were going into the break, you played a commercial for your book, your new book,
mm-hmm.
which was a good reminder to me to pick that sucker up. And it speaks to what I want to mention, you know, the way the words are used. In your second hour, your guest was talking about, what is the word that he used? Special entitlements,
mm-hmm.
okay? And today, Secretary of Treasury Paulson, speaking to the Senate Budget Committee on this economic stimulus plan, says he's increasingly concerned that in the Senate, the bazaar is open and the special interests are coming to the trough.
Right, the special interests from the Republican point of view being we the people.
Yeah, okay. Now,
how dare those special interests like people on Social Security want to have actually cost of living adjustments?
What they need to do, in my estimation, is rename what they're calling this program. It ought to be the foreplay program because they're approaching the economic stimulus like a lot of guys. They're doing what they think their partner needs and wants as opposed to what their partner actually needs and wants,
right.
You know?
It ain't close to it.
And as someone who is, I mean, it's not an entitlement. To me, it's a contract because I worked for 20 years and paid into Social Security before becoming disabled with the understanding that either at retirement time there would be something there for me or it would act as a safety net.
Well, that's why it is an entitlement. You're entitled to it. Yeah, well, I agree. It's a contract as well.
But the way they use that word, it's like I'm trying to get something right. that I don't deserve and shouldn't have.
I know. It's like left is right. They have reinvented the word. I mean, people back during the Roosevelt era understood, hey, this is something we're all paying into. We're all agreeing on this. We're all going to do it. It is mandated for everybody, and we're all entitled to it.
Well,
and therefore, it's called
an
entitlement.
I'm going to scrape together some money, cash in some plastic bottles, and get your book.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott. Thanks a lot,
Jim. Figure out what these boys are up to.
Okay. Good talking with you. Tomorrow we'll be live from CPAC. Anything could happen. Be sure to tune in. It's going to be a lot of fun. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. It all in a constitutionally limited democratic republic. It all begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.